We are back once again. It is time for Kung Fu Theater.
Yes.
My name's Mal, with me as always.
Dr. Morbius.
And parts unknown.
Whoa.
So time to talk about some
martial arts.
Awesome Kung Fu shenanigans.
Yeah, I mean, as the more I watch these movies, the more I realize how all-encompassing the genre is.
It's huge. And I know you could do lots of subdivisions within it, but I don't. I'm not really like that, you know. In almost all aspects of my life, I just kind of generalize like metal or, you know, kung fu or whatever, action. You can kind of like break stuff down a million different, you know, Norwegian scream core metal, and I'm like, nope, don't do that. And just
when you said subdivision, I'm thinking subdivisions in the backs of cars, subdivision in the shopping malls or whatever. That Rush song.
Oh my god,
like 1989 or
Rush.
Whatever. I actually like that song.
Yeah, I like a lot of Rush songs. Yeah. Believe it or not,
I just remember that one. Yeah. You know? Be cool or be cast out.
Yes.
Wow, cast out.
Oh man.
Anyway,
Limelight.
Yeah, right. That era. Well,
that guy had such an operatic voice.
Who, so Getty?
Yeah,
they're done. They're done, yeah. The drummer didn't want to
They were done in the late 70s, early 80s, but they just didn't know it.
Yeah, they're still very popular. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, that's totally done.
That's for a different show called the Indie Circuit.
Yes, a Radio St. Pete exclusive, the Indie Circuit. This is about Kung Fu. So, if you're here for Kung Fu, you have chosen the right path.
Yes.
Anyway, what is our movie this week? This is, you picked this one.
Yes, just because the title was so funny. The Tongue Father.
The Tongue Father.
I guess the Godfather must have been out around the same
time. Possibly,
yeah. So maybe if you misread the title, you thought it was the Godfather, but it was really the Tongue Father.
They got two extra sales, and they took it. They're like, yeah. Two people accidentally went into, they thought it was The Godfather. But.
Well, I'll tell you one that probably got a few people. Back at, this is a kung fu movie, too. We watched it. Lady Whirlwind was released in the 70s to drive-ins or whatever as Deep Thrust. Now, can you imagine people driving by a drive-in and going like, hey, they're playing Deep Throat in here.
Yep.
Really?
Well,
let's go see it. And all of a sudden, it's like...
U-turn,
it's
free
like,
money.
Angela Mao kicking everybody's butt. And you're like, as opposed to... Linda Lovelace doing something else, and you're like,
you're like, wow. by the first act, like there was like four cars left.
Yeah, right. The ones that were left became Kung Fu fans for life. So there
exactly.
you go. But anyway,
there's a lesson to be learned.
There's not a lesson to be learned. I don't know what it is, but
not all can travel the path of Kung Fu greatness. This one was a really pleasant surprise. I will tell you that. Like, the only thing I had trouble with, and this is throughout the whole movie. Kung Fu movies are generally, they're all out of, out of Hong Kong, and not all, obviously, but this one was Japanese.
Was it Japanese?
I don't know if it was made in Japan, but I will say that those were Japanese characters.
Yes,
It was all, like,
it was about
samurai.
From,
it was
from Japan to China or
yeah,
something, right?
But all the bosses, all the people, I almost think they were kind of saying, like, the boss people were Japanese. The cop and his super kick sidekick were Chinese.
I think so.
That was the angle I took. I don't know if that's correct or not. Because the whole time I'm like, okay, was this actually filmed in Japan? Because it could have been. But then a lot of it seemed Chinese, you know. So I just had trouble.
And another thing that was implied later on, but I'm thinking this, and I'm not going to give anything away. It's just whatever. Huh. Did they actually eat the dog?
Yes.
They did. I wasn't like...
Yes. I'm almost sure.
Okay.
Because that would have... And the Chinese-Japanese thing, I'm thinking they're also playing it up like this was during occupied times.
Yeah.
No, it couldn't have been, though.
No, it wasn't. It was...
Because this is...
It was spy times. There were suits and stuff
Yeah,
like
so this
that.
Is very... This is a little disjointed, but most kung fu movies are a lot disjointed, so it's not like I hold it against it. They're usually very... let's not care too much about script. Let's just kick a lot of people, you know.
Which is basically what this movie is.
Oh, yeah. And this one is a very, very good action, very good choreographed fighting.
It's really like a crime movie in a way.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
And Rock Tien, the main guy, he's doing a little bit of a Leone.
Police drama.
It's like a little bit of a Leone thing with the cigarette, with a little Clint Eastwood, you know.
If you ever smoked and quit, don't watch this movie, because it'll make you want to smoke a cigarette. They don't ever stop smoking cigarettes in this movie.
Pretty much, yeah.
this one is a very strong example of one of my favorite ways of shooting a kung fu movie. Some action movies, some kung fu action movies, I mean, the camera like sprints into the action as they're doing the action as a way of the, as the close up, where they actually like they're running with it or and zooming. So it's almost like they're double zoom into the action, and it creates like this speed and it helps create like the tension and the speed of the punching and the kicking. And this one does it really well. Some don't do it so well. Some don't even try it. Some just do the zoom in and out, which that's very a common trope. But when they have the cameraman that's running alongside or running with them as they're doing it and zooming, that it's a very good style. And some do it right. And this was one that did it right. Not every fight scene, but the ones in indoors when they were in those warehouses.
Yeah.
They were using that because I think they had a confined space.
So they wanted some movement in the camera.
They needed to do something. And that and this was one of them. And it was, I love that style of shooting. Whenever I see it, I'm like, yeah, that's all, you know, that gets me wound up. I love the power of it, you know.
Right. It gives you more of, the action is, gives it a little more of an oomph to it.
Oh, whatever. It's beautiful. It's
as opposed to a static camera.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with the static camera if it's well choreographed, but that one where they're running around with it, it really adds so much. And it's something that not a lot of American movies do that.
Well, I was going to ask you, do American or Western movies choreograph? What are the better choreographed Western martial arts movies?
Oh,
like is Rush Hour? Well, I'm sure. Well, Jackie Chan probably choreographed.
The influences from kung fu movies even came into American movies. Almost every movie ever now, if it has a good fight scene in it, has been ultra choreographed. You know, the influence that China gave to the film community, the film world. It was that it made such a difference that even action movies, even the 80s action movies, were so over the top choreographed. And that's why it looks so tight and the punching and the kicking and the action is so solid, you know, because in America, of course, instead of doing powder on the foot to emphasize the power of the kicks, you know, they use squibs and special effects and explosions and all kinds of crazy stuff, flames in the background, you know, and it all just keeps like building and building layers of visual craziness that you're trying to wrap your head around, and it makes the action even that much more powerful, kind of.
Right, yeah.
You know, it makes your emotions kind of amp up.
And this is a very dark movie because it was shot in like a lot of like the dark areas, and there was like in alleys, and then there was a warehouses and stuff like that. So it had a darker tone then.
I don't want to say noirish, but
yeah,
slight noir influence, yeah. You know,
like the crime influence was real strong. Like before I watched the movie, I even told you, I think this is most of a crime movie. I don't know how much kung fu's in it, but there was a good chunk.
Oh, it was a solid kung fu movie. It just also had like very cop,
yeah,
rough cop noir aspects to it. And that's what adds so many levels and layers to it. It was a fun movie. In that it wasn't just I'm going to the village, I'm going to learn some new skills, I'm going to fight.
Right, or my school's better, I'm going to revenge my school.
Right, which is very common. You know, this one was one of those cop movies where we have to stop the drug trade. They killed the last guy. I'm going to send in Super Cop and his sidekick, Ultra Super Cop.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Because the sidekick lays waste.
And these guys are all business. They don't crack jokes or nothing. I mean, there wasn't any light side to them. They were like machines.
Yep, and they murdered everyone.
Everybody.
They murdered everyone. There was nothing. It was insane. Like, and that's about halfway through, you're like, wow, this is rough. These are like the Dirty Harrys or the Hanzo the Razor.
These are
those ones that are like nasty. Yeah. Nasty, rough. They just didn't over-gore it, which, thank you for that.
I don't
need any of that garbage. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to just dive into the plot and talk about it a little bit.
All right.
Thanks. We'll be right back.
Tell your father. He must kill his foreign aid bill to Shanglong by Monday. Or we will kill you.
Hello? Daddy?
A lesson to you. I mean, you can't treat women like the guys with breasts. Didn't your mother ever talk to you about a thing like this? Huh?
Hey, want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
All right, hot potato.
Yeah, with Jim Kelly, the great Jim Kelly.
Well, you said there's a show coming
yeah,
up.
Yeah, there's
right?
a show coming up. This is what I've heard. I haven't seen any. I haven't read about it. My friend was telling me about it. He's pretty reliable. Black Samurai, based on the.
On the movie.
Well, the movie was based on books. There was a series of books called Black Samurai, and RZA's producing it, and Common's going to be the...
Oh, that's cool. Because RZA gave us the Man with the Iron Fists 1 and 2, and I said, I think I'm the only person that saw 2.
Because I love me some blaxploitation kung fu, man.
No, it'll be... I'm sure it'll be solid. He's For all the people that like have kind of poo-pooed what the RZA's done, I think it's great. I don't know why there was so much backlash towards him. It got negative reviews, but I'm like, okay, what kung fu movie other than like that?
Enter the Dragon
and flying dagger. What's that one?
Crouching Tiger,
Hidden Dragon. Like those. Okay, those are like
opus.
Operas, but yeah, what? But for the most part, the kung fu movies I love, they'd all get zeros too. Yeah, good stuff.
I don't think this is, but even though it had elements of it, would you consider The Matrix kind of like a martial arts movie in a way?
Wow, that's a tough one because it's so sci-fi. Yeah. But that's like the setting, and it does a lot of it delves into that genre a lot.
Yeah.
You know, because it could be action, it could be sci-fi, it could be kung fu.
Yeah.
That's a I can't answer that. I don't know. I don't know the right answer to that one.
We'll figure it out one day, I guess.
Yeah, I doubt it.
So anyway, our movie,
Task
go
at Hand,
for it.
The Tong Father, you know, we kind of open up, we're in a disgruntled police office, and, you know, the chief is like, what's the name of the guy that got killed?
I can't remember.
Darn it, it was such a cool name, too. He's like, okay, he's dead.
Well, the first scene is him getting killed, right? Isn't the beginning of the movie?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Is the guy, fighting, and they kill him. The gangsters kill him.
Yep.
And he's chasing after an opium dealer or something like that. So it's all about drug trade or whatever.
Total drug trade. Total, we got to stop the flow of opium. Our super agent, they're trying to latch onto the 007 stuff, too.
Sure.
Because they're saying super agent, you know.
Sure.
Our super agent got killed, and you're... You know, we're sending you in because he was trying to do it by the books, but we know you're just... He's like, just get it done.
Yeah.
He's like, I understand what you mean. I'm going to go kill everyone. He doesn't
basically
say that, but he says, okay, I gotcha. Touches his nose twice and walks out. Oh, and he's like, oh, by the way, here's a very Bruce Lee-ish sidekick. Because this guy wants to be Kato.
He wants to be Kato real bad,
He kind of nonchalantly stands in the background like Kato.
Exactly.
A lot, you know,
that's exactly the way I felt. Yeah.
He's totally cheesing it up, you know. Not cheesing it up. That's who his inspiration was.
He's pretty,
deadpan, yeah.
So
now, and that's it. Like, they literally go from the bottom to the top of this chain, video game style.
Basically.
The guy gets off the train. He's like, oh, he finds the first guy. The guy who's delivering the opium tries to get jumped by henchmen from a rival gang.
Yeah, there's a rival gang involved.
Within the organization, which is weird. Like, one guy that's within this organization is feeling a little bit big for his britches, and he wants to become the boss man or whatever. So he sends some guys to try to steal the opium, and the bag man dispatches of them easily. I mean, which shows his skill. And then right when he's done fighting, then the super agent comes in.
Yeah.
He's like, nah, I think I'm going to take that bag. And he walks over and he says, you got a light? And he lights a cigarette. And then he just dispatches this guy. He kills him.
Pretty easily.
Yeah, he kills him, and then he steals the opium out of the bag.
Right.
And just kind of like leaves. And you're like, right. Okay, that's weird. Now they flash forward to the big boss man, the Japanese boss man's office. And they're like, oh, the bag's empty. And he's like, oh. And they're like, it's that other guy. You know, he's been trying to steal into your thing. And much like the Japanese bosses of most of these movies, he has two guys that don't say anything and are just kind of standing in the background. They're like the toughs, you know.
They're the bad asses.
And these guys remind you of like the skinny Storm from Big Trouble in Little China. Right. The one that rides down in the clouds or the lightning, I mean.
Yeah.
These two are just very thin, very ugly, very mean guys. You know, they kill who has to be killed.
Yeah.
Only when they approach the boss kind of thing. You know, they don't get involved in anything else. So they're just kind of ominously standing there, and you're like, well, there's the end bosses. You know, we're looking at them now.
Right.
Which
right,
is very
right.
common.
Yeah,
know.
Sure.
And then from there, then they go to pick up the guy, and the guy comes in and says, oh, I'll prove my loyalty, and he breaks his own leg.
Yeah, well, that was the guy who was getting too big for his britches.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. Because they were like, whoa, we think you stole this opium. And he's like, well, I can't deny it.
Yeah, that was a pretty weird scene where he's like, let me show you how loyal I am. And then he, like, grabs his leg and he's like, breaks it. And he's like, and then he crawls out. He goes, well, you help him out. And he goes, no, that's okay. I'll crawl out.
Oh, and it's so long and weird because he's like just dragging himself across the floor. And that is very Yakuza, in that very often if they do something wrong, they'll cut off their own pinky and give it to the boss. Like the bosses, from if you believe the lore, have like pinkies of those who have wronged and stuff like that. Like,
okay.
So it's kind of a weird thing, but true to nature, you know, those Yakuza doesn't fool around.
Yeah,
they're not, and the Chinese Tong are the same way. Where you're kind of the same as the mafia, you know.
But here's a question we were talking about before. And you said something that confused me a little bit. The Yakuza is one thing, and you said the Tong is Chinese.
Yes.
So is this movie is Japan and China, right?
I think they're kind of accenting that this is a drug trade from Japan into China. And the Chinese captain doesn't like it and wants to stop it.
Okay.
That's what I took from it. This wasn't defined in any way. That's the thing.
No,
like,
it wasn't. No.
In fact, I only saw the differences because I know the cultures. I feel that I know the cultures, you know, especially Japanese, where I could say that's Japanese. I don't think that's Japanese. Like, that's the only differences, you know. It was never said, these are the Japanese devils. Or these,
no.
And I think probably lost in translation, because probably they played that angle a lot more if it played in China, but then in America they're like, no one knows or cares
because
about
that,
this
because that like that jerky police guy or whatever,
uh-huh.
wasn't he looked like he was wearing like the Red Army outfit or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what confused me, because most often that is, and that was also weird that was in the movie. There was an officer that was the Red Army, but I almost kind of thought that was a Japanese soldier, like talking about when they were like in China. So that's what was disjointed, because that's not this timeline. This is at a different time, you know, unless they were trying to say this was during the occupation, which makes sense. Like, that makes the most sense. If this was during the Japanese occupation of China, then that's when this would have happened, and that was the Japanese guy like being really disrespectful to all the Chinese people, which that was the angle that they were playing.
But when was the Japanese occupation of China? It was in a long time ago.
Yeah,
right?
long time.
Guys wore suits or anything.
No,
like
that's
that.
Why. That's
a little confusing.
That's where. That's was the intent, but this was set in the '70s.
Yeah.
You know. Straight
pretty
70s.
Much, yeah.
Straight
much.
Up 70s.
70s haircuts and the whole deal.
And like the silver suit the guy's wearing, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm like, I understood what they were saying, but it didn't jive, you know. But whatever.
Right.
You you often forgive these kind of oversights in Chinese movies, or in the Kung Fu movies, I mean.
Yeah, we were looking into it a lot more than, you know.
Than they did.
Than they did, probably.
Because there was a whole side plot of this Japanese or red Chinese officer who steals from the dead. And at one point they show him sitting, they making Chinese workers sit in and
before they can go past.
So he can sit on them. He sits on them like they're a bench. And you're like, what am I watching here? That was a little bit weird. But they had to super vilify him because later they kill him and eat his dog for dinner.
Yes.
That's a true thing. All right, here we're going to take a break. We'll come back for the finale.
Yes, the grand finale.
Grand finale. The grand finale. Wow.
Yeah.
Deep, man.
Deep.
Unleashed to wreak vengeance on the evil ones who brought about his untimely death. 5 years ago, Bruce Lee, king of Kung Fu and undisputed master of the martial arts, was buried. But not before making a deal with the Black Angel of Death. Now, his tormented soul returns as Bruce Lee fights back from the grave.
Damn you!
Every contest, the fighters, the killers, the mobsters, the slime of the underworld, the bad and the beautiful. Bruce Lee fights back from the grave. Mysteriously, through his immortal inner forces, Bruce Lee made a spiritual agreement with the invincible and unbeatable Black Angel of Death to free him from the torment and prison of his grave. Can Bruce Lee defeat the invincible and unbeatable, the Black Angel of Death? See if you dare. A supernatural action American movie starring Bruce Lee. The dragon never died. He was just waiting for the moment when he could return from the grave to seek revenge. Warning, due to the constant action seen in this picture, the producer requests that persons under 17 be accompanied by an adult. Lee fights back from the grave.
You gotta give me a ride. I'm way too big to drive to the devil's house.
And we're back for the conclusion after Bruce Lee fights from the grave, or fights back, from,
back
the
from the grave.
Back from the grave.
Yeah, they don't make them like that anymore.
There's a reason. It's called lawsuits. Anyway, yes. So now here we are. I mean, the Japanese boss sends his henchman to go kill that guy anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so he's walking down this very picturesque long...
with his crutches.
Yeah,
now,
his crutch. And it's a very long picturesque alleyway. So they the Japanese gang surrounds him and they put up a little bit of a fight.
Yeah, and the one guy, he's like, he looks pretty confident, you know. He's like, yeah, I'll get him. Even with my crutches, I can, but no.
It's so funny because the guy stands there and he doesn't move.
No, he's sitting there smoking a cigarette.
Very picturesque. Very, they did that for effect and it worked. Because
this movie was made in China, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. That's what I think. All right. And, woof.
Hong Kong.
Yeah. So the Japanese gang finally defeats his sidekicks, and then he starts fighting with them, and he's beating them a little bit, but they get the better of him and kill him.
And in the meantime, these guys are just watching everything.
Yeah,
they're on the mainland. They're watching all this.
Super agent and his sidekick are just watching.
Yeah,
and they're kind of like, well, I think they're just like, well, they're learning who's in charge.
Yeah, and they're doing our work for us because there's a few less guys we got to kill.
And they're gonna kill him, so who cares, you know?
Yeah.
So they kill him, and then while they're still watching him, that's when we're introduced to either the Japanese occupation soldier or the red army soldier.
Yeah.
Who's just walking around with his dog. He kind of comes in and he takes the ring off the guy's finger and he and then he pulls a gold tooth out of his mouth. I was like, wow, what? But whatever. Yeah, just a ghoul.
Just know? Adds a little more like noir to this.
Very ghoulish. And also, like I said, sets him up to be super evil, you know.
Pretty much, yeah.
So then now I'm trying to think of how this plays out. I know it in my head.
Now they start like going on a killing rampage. They find one gang. They go to another one of the lower Godfather guys, and they're like, "Hey, you know, I want you." They show up at his house when he's with some woman or whatever.
Yeah.
And they don't want to let him in, and they beat the guy to let him in or whatever.
That's right.
And he goes, "Yeah, I want some opium," you know. And he's like, he goes to the guy, "Yeah, meet me over at this warehouse over there, and I'll get your drugs." Yeah. Or he goes, "Yeah, okay."
Meet me at the same setting that we had the other shot in.
Exactly.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and of course they kick their ass or whatever.
Yeah, he kills them. He kills them. He kills the head guy there. Then there's this disjointed love scene,
with another head guy. Because you got this is we're going up the you
the,
know
the gauntlet
up the go, the yeah, gauntlet of yeah, like
this
you know,
is the pyramid scheme of opium, and they're just working his way up. And I didn't for a while know who this guy was.
Yeah, I know.
Like, there's a guy in there, and they open up the little tea room, and the girl comes in and takes off her clothes, and you're like, who is this?
Which bad guy is this?
Yeah, but whatever, you know. So I don't even remember. Oh, this is the guy that has like that. I think that castle.
Yeah.
So he kills him.
And his guy, because every one of these guys has a bunch of guys with them. And when they run out of guys, then they're the last ones to fight.
Right, of course. Standard video game physics.
Yeah.
Fight through a bunch of people, then fight the head guy. Fight through a bunch of people, then fight the head guy. And bosses of each stage.
And then
right
before they get, I think they're getting rid of everybody very quickly and very easily almost.
Yeah.
And as they're working their way towards the main guy, that's when they go, there's the scene where they... they see the guard and he's sitting on people that are walking by.
Yeah, it's so weird.
That's what we talked about before. And they're like watching this guy and he's making all the people that go through, okay, get on your knees right there. I'm going to sit on
you. He sits on him and it's such an odd thing.
Yeah. And then these two guys show up and the one guy says, go ahead.
Oh, they split into super oddity because one is a Japanese guy who's going to rape a girl.
Right.
And then one is either a Japanese or a Chinese guy sitting on people.
Yeah.
So they split up and they go, well, you kill him and I'll kill him. And they're like, okay. And so he follows the guy that's going to rape a girl, the head super agent.
Yeah.
And Bruce Lee wannabe starts causing trouble with the guard, and the guard chases him. And this is almost like cutscene back and forth. So he stops the guy from raping the girl, the super agent does, and kills him. And all the meanwhile, then the cop is chasing him, and they just show fur, and he gets him in an alleyway.
Yeah, you hear the dog.
They hear the dog and the guy, like getting beat up. Then they're at a fire, and this dog is on the spit.
Yeah, because it's late at night. You don't see the dog, but you see him cleaning his sword, and you're going like, okay, it's late at night. They got their shirts off or whatever, you know, whatever's going on. And he's cleaning the sword, and then, like, you go, huh. And then all of a sudden you see the guard there, and he's, like, on his knees. He goes, please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. And, of course, the guy raises the sword and kills him. And you're going, like, wait a minute. That's the guy, the dog.
And then you see two legs sticking up off the spit. They don't show it.
Oh, you do? I didn't see the two legs.
On the bottom thing, because you're like, that's not a chicken. They're eating the dog.
Yeah. It was like,
because he's like, no, let it on there for a while. I like it when it's done more.
It was just weird, you know?
And you're like, what? Because then this whole thing is that now they're going to go to the boat. The head guy, or
another henchman.
Another henchman who was like the cousin of the main boss.
Yeah.
He's there at this boat, and this boat pulls up with tons of opium. And they just walk across this field and kill them. And I think that at this point, then the cousin runs back to the castle. And he's like, oh, and he calls his head boss.
Yeah, Mr. Big.
Mr. Big. He's like, oh, these guys are coming, and you know, and what do you want me to do? And he's like, I'll get out of here. And he's like, okay, I'll be back.
Yeah, he's kind of a quitter.
He's like, I'll be back to handle this, you know. So
then they end up showing up there, and one of them grabs the nephew or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll take care of the rest of these guys. And of course, you know, the main guy, Rock Tien, kicks everybody's butt.
Yeah.
And then, like, some of them come in and they, like, quit. They go, no, that's okay. We see you. You kicked everybody's butt. We're done. So I think they end up splitting.
They run to the top of the stairs.
Yeah, right.
And then the head Yakuza guy's there, and he's like, eh. He just nods and says, go. And they, like, scurry out.
You know? Then he gets the big two guys.
Yep, now it's on. He walks in, and he sits down, and the whole time he's doing the opium, he's sniffing opium.
Yeah, right. I thought he was doing coke, but it's opium.
The guy's like, that stuff's already rotted your brain. You think you're so great. You know, that super dread. This is the only time, not the only time, this is one of the only times he talks.
Pretty much. The
super agent doesn't do a whole lot of talking.
Pretty much, yeah. He just kicks. Up to this point, it's been pretty easy with him kicking people's butts.
But now
it's
final boss time.
Yeah.
And the final boss's henchmen
are
the top of the top.
Yeah.
Because if you're the head guy, the guys that are with you.
Yeah, they got to be like, you know. Invincible. So one guy's got one's a sword guy.
Yep.
And the other guy's, you know, just a regular
kung fu guy. Yeah.
But the kung fu guy ends up putting the hurt on Kato, sort of. Kato lives, but, you know, he beats him up pretty bad.
You're not sure if he's going to live at that point. When they're fighting, you're like, ooh, he might kill Kato. Wannabe, and then it'll be 2-on-1.
Right.
But then he they're doing the only thing I didn't like was they flashed back and forth between the two fights. There was no pullback to establishing shot, and they're also a little too quick. Mm-hmm. Now that's such a minor nitpick. It wasn't a bad fight scene. These were great fight scenes all the way around. Even the ones where they quickly dispatch them, it felt right.
Right.
It was like that quick, like just killed. Take your opium. And you're like, wow. You know, but that's... This guy isn't going to play around.
Yeah, these were longer... This was a longer fight. Between this point and the end, 10, 15 minutes or whatever, you know. So he dispatches... he's basically fighting two guys because his buddy's, like, on the ground. He beats the martial arts guy, but then he's got the sword guy that he's fighting, too. Yeah. And the sword guy cuts him a couple of times.
Yeah, he gets him.
He gets him, and he makes him difficult, but he ends up kicking him out the door or something. Yeah, out the window or something. And then you get to the final, you know, the big boss. And, of course, he turns out to be even more badass.
More powerful than the other ones, yeah.
So there's, like, a big old fight. He's almost killing, you know, the hero. You know, he's got him in a headlock, and, you know, all this is going on or whatever. And finally, you know, he is able to flip him. And then he's going to get rid of the guy, but the guy goes behind, like, a door, and he does, like, a disappearing act.
Oh, yeah, that whole thing, you know.
Yeah. So then he's looking around for him, and then he's going, like, and all of a sudden the camera pans up, and the guy's waiting on top to jump on him. Right. And as he's walking, he jumps on him, puts him in the headlock, but he does a flips and kicks him out the window, and then, you know.
The end.
And then the end. And at the end, they're both, like, on a train leaving, and they're both, like, you know, worn out. Like, one guy looks like he's almost half dead or whatever.
Yeah, they're just smoking a cigarette in the train.
But, yeah, smoking a cigarette today. Yeah, job done.
Thank God that happened. So, yeah, I mean, it was a very solid movie, very good movie.
It was a strong movie.
I loved it.
Crime kung fu movie or whatever.
And that added a nice...
No nonsense.
That added a really nice...
feel to it.
Yeah, the crime, the 70s, was not nicer, but it was just a different change of pace. It was fun, refreshing,
yeah,
you know.
Definitely, yeah.
So I'm going to give it, I'm going to go with like an 8.
I'll give it an 8, one, too.
You
know, yeah.
Very solid. Make solid sure you go, movie. If you can find it.
It's a hard-to-find movie. I got a torrent of it, and it was on some company called Code Red that puts on collector's DVDs. It was on one of the sets, and it's out of print now, but it'll come back.
I hope so, because it's great.
I read somewhere, it's on one of these collector sets, like 20 Kung Fu movies,
as
Hands of Death. But there's another movie called Hands of Death, which is a ninja movie, but, check it out.
That's it for this week. My name is Mal, and me as always,
Dr. Morbius.
And we'll see you next week for more Kung Fu Glory.